It's Loopholes episode 24. Hello there, it's your weekly esoterotic chat. Big discussion going to be going on here. I'm Ian Bolesworth, hello.
And I'm Kate Cheryl, hello.
Are you ready for a big, big discussion?
A big discussion. Yeah. And I already feel quite mentally tumbled because of that.
It's going to be a big, big discussion. Yeah. I don't know what about though. You've kept your cards very close to your chest this week.
Yeah.
I've noticed. I suspect it's because you couldn't think of anything. That's just my little suspicion.
No, I have something, and it's something nice and light and lovely.
Is it? I could do with that, really.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit overwhelmed.
Yes, I have as well. I think with the big topics that we've tried to just condense.
I probably shouldn't say it on here. Yeah. I think I hate talking about the esoterotic. I think I've got to that.
Well, I think...
that level...
I think I
got three interview requests this week to talk about ghost stuff, and I've knocked them all back. I'm not doing media interviews anymore.
No.
But when I was thinking about them, thinking, oh, well, I could just do them. It's only like going to be an hour of my life. And then I just thought, no. Like, it's bad enough talking with you about it, and you're my pal, but to strangers, and having to either defend myself or... speak to an echo chamber, whatever it's going to be. Yeah. I just can't.
No,
I can't get myself up for it.
I know. The thing is, I can't really legally agree with you.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just going to leave that
there. Well, no, but you find it interesting, though. You tell me about things relatively regular, and I'm like...
Well, your usual response is, why are you telling me
this? Why are you telling me this?
Yeah.
But also, I don't know how you can... like, when you watch things, you watch stuff on TV and you watch all these programmes and all the stuff about ghosts and mysteries and all that sort of stuff. And I just get quite overwhelmed with it. I just feel like I couldn't... that couldn't be my whole existence all the time. But then again, this has been your whole existence for your career, this sort of stuff.
Kind of, yeah, for the most part.
Well, certainly the gothic stuff.
Yes.
And all that sort. So it's been very infused with what you do and who you are as a person.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a small part of me, really,
I think. It is, yeah.
And certainly creatively, it was something that came later on. I was always interested in it, but it was something that came later on in my creative work.
Yeah.
But I think I do tire of it, like, quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
I like chatting with you anyway.
Yeah.
But I do find it a bit like, I don't know how someone could live their life. I don't know how you live your life.
I don't know. Well, I do know. I live my life in an incredibly highly strung state.
And do you think part of that is to do with the theme of stuff that you take interest in? Because you're big on death.
Yes.
You love your death.
Death is my comfy space, really.
We should explore that at some point. And there's no time like the present. Why do you...
yeah.
Actually, the way I was saying that then sounded confrontational. And I'm not being confrontational.
Yeah.
Why do you take comfort in a burial space? Is that right?
It is. I love cemeteries. Yeah. You know, it's no secret that I spent a lot of my childhood in cemeteries. I've worked in cemeteries.
So is it the same as me collecting Star Wars figures again now?
It's,
like, vintage Star Wars figures?
It's comforting and it feels safe. And I think that's something that a lot of my esoterotic work doesn't bring me. So certainly academically speaking, you know, I've met a lot of my closest friends through death work and through academic death stuff.
So
not killing people.
So what some people would like, some people go to the pub, you go to a cemetery.
Well,
that's where you meet all your mates.
Not necessarily. It might be a nice regional conference centre.
No, but I'm interested in it because I respond.
Mm.
I think I've been, or not I've been, I have felt in the last 12 to 18 months very surrounded by death.
Yes.
Like, I felt like death has been a very present thing.
Yeah.
Either people poorly, people dying, people, you know, people that do know, people that don't know. Like, but it felt like for a good long period of time, probably still now as well, that death was a very constant thing. Now, personally, I'm not bothered about dying myself, but I don't react nicely really to the idea of other people dying or people actually dying or that. You know, I do get very emotive.
Yeah,
I mean, I make that sound like I'm a unique.
Yeah,
little boy.
I'd like to clarify.
Do you know what? That... sometimes when people die, I cry, mate.
So when I say that, you know, death is my sort of comfortable space.
Yeah.
Not actual dying. I'm not interested in hospice care and things like that. I find that incredibly upsetting. And obviously, if anyone around me was poorly or anything like that, I'd be just as upset as anyone else. My interaction with death and dying has more been after the fact. So the idea of when the initial horrible stuff has happened and then you're left with memorialization and legacy and going through that process, that's what I have an interest in. It's certainly not like a fun, frivolous. I don't go to a cemetery for my jollies and, you know, that's a bad example because I run a ball in a cemetery. Scrap that.
Yeah, that's true. You do have a ball.
But
all singing, all dancing in a cemetery.
Anyway, it's more of like a spooky disco, really. But yeah, I find it a lot more safe and a lot more comforting because all the discussions I've had about death and cemeteries and things like that have been quite reasoned. There's an element of presumed intelligence between parties. So if I'm discussing cemeteries, burial methods, memorialisation, you know, even like masonry type things, you know, if I'm discussing them with someone else who has an interest in that field,
right,
we sort of approach it from the same level. And we, you know, I wouldn't presume that someone there would be dismissive of the act of suffering and grief and mourning. Whereas in esoterotica, broadly in ghost hunting, talking about anything that falls under that umbrella, you know, UFOs, aliens, lizard men, even orbs, you know, things like that. It seems like whenever you start a discussion, certainly an open discussion like we do, I'm very highly strung and I'm anxious, really anxious, because I'm waiting to be misconstrued and I'm waiting for people to say, well, actually, that was really rude, that was really dismissive, presuming that I didn't take everything with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, I think you get overly hung up, forgive me, but I think you get overly hung up about that, about what you perceive to be the perception of you.
Well, I do, because I'd hate for someone to think that I was being dismissive or cavalier about something incredibly serious.
Yeah, but I think it runs deeper than that with you. I've seen you in, like, takeaways and stuff, and if they say, but you said this, and you immediately jump to, oh, saying I'm a stupid girl, are you? Like, I think you've got a hang up about that.
That guy the other night, he was trying to gaslight me into saying that I said something I didn't. I never said starters, okay?
No, I understand, but I think you jump to, I'm perhaps guilty of it myself in a different way, but I think you jump to worst case scenario that, they are doing this, they mean this.
But I think that's
when they're actually just being rude. It's not actually to do with fundamentally.
I can appreciate there are rude people who aren't, you know, misogynists or, you know, presuming that I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
But that presumption comes with a lot of experience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And certainly when it comes to ghosts and things like that, even just, you know, let's say on a podcast years ago, I said, tell you what, it's illegal to go ghost hunting in cemeteries.
Right.
Honestly, it was like I'd started a rally.
And were you doing a joke?
No.
Is it illegal to go ghost hunting in cemeteries?
Well, it kind of is. It's trespass.
I mean, that was very condescending, the way you said that.
No.
That you really...
No, I mean, it's...
I mean, the listener didn't see your face, but you looked at me like, are you stupid, mate?
No, I mean, there's the trespass element, but also people that are running businesses, live streaming ghost hunts in cemeteries. You know, there's a lot of just quite dull legal
jargon. So follow that through then. So what happened then? What was the next?
And it started off with, you know, the comments coming in on one of these live stream podcasts of, oh, well, actually, I've done it and it's fine. My nana's buried there. How dare you tell me what I can and can't do in a cemetery? And then, you know, there'd be cemeteries tweeting me saying, actually, I think you should be more respectful of this. And it's like, I have spent so much of my life.
I had exactly the same thing when I built a greenhouse in the cemetery my granddad's buried in. And everyone was going, oh, you're not allowed to do that. You need planning permission. You can't. I was like, I think you're fine. My granddad is buried here. So I told him. I stood my ground.
Yeah. But I feel that a lot. Like, certainly when we talk about things on here, because we've only got like an hour to discuss.
We've got as long as we want. We can do 5 hours if we want.
Yeah, I mean, we've only got so long to discuss a topic, so if a topic has got 10 players in it, I can't give you a full ethical lowdown, nor should I have to, and nor should you want me to,
right,
on what they're like. Like, I afford the listeners the same respect that I presume they afford me.
What do you mean by that? I don't know what you mean by that. Explain that to me.
In that, if I'm talking about someone who's controversial, or even Yuri, my mate.
Oh, you mean, yeah. Okay, so you've got to express an opinion on them as a person.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas,
well, that's a frustrating, but I think that's a, I mean, it may remain forever so, but I think that's a present trend. I think.
Yeah.
Like, it might be this forever now, but I do think there's an element of, and it's all to do with, you know, either silencing people or that word, cancelling people. It's all to do with that. There seems to be a, is threat too big a word? Like, maybe, like, an idea of, like, if a group of people decide they don't like someone, even though you may be indifferent to yourself.
Yeah.
Or be like, well, I didn't think that was that bad. Or, you know, whatever you think yourself, if you don't toe the line of the mob, then I need to think of better words than that, because that does imply a dismissal of them, and I don't mean it that way. But do you know, what I mean by
absolutely.
That? If you don't toe the party line, as it were, or what's generally agreed to be, again, these phrases that have suddenly happened, the right side of history and all this sort of stuff, that you are complicit in some way.
Exactly.
Whereas and it's like, you can't spend your life giving the biography of everybody you ever talked about. Is that what you mean?
Yes, it's more if I mention someone, like, mentioning is not an endorsement. I'll just put that quite firmly.
Right, okay.
Because I, well, you know, I overthink things anyway. I'm constantly waiting to fall off a new shiny cliff.
Right.
But certainly with Loopholes, when we've mentioned people like Dawkins, Shermer and the Warrens, we mentioned Ed and Lorraine Warren really early on, and I said, you know, I enjoy the Warrens' work.
Right.
I'm waiting for maybe more aggressive feedback or people...
Well, if you read it that way as well.
Yeah, yeah, and you know...
Because I've seen no aggressive feedback to this at any point. I've not.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen things that have touched a nerve with you, perhaps.
Yes.
Perhaps in part due to your preconception of what you'll get because of your past experience.
And I think because I'm quite...
I should also point out I don't really read a lot of the feedback.
It's best not, because I'm really upset me the other day.
Really, is that?
Let's talk about it later.
Okay.
But I think certainly because I'm a lot more active on social media than you. Certainly on like paranormal Twitter
and things
like that. So I see a lot of these arguments and these sort of dogfights fire up. And they're like blankets, and I feel like I'm on the outskirts of like a big mosh pit, desperately trying not to get pulled in.
But what's your concern? Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? Genuinely,
the worst thing that could happen is that my legitimacy as a writer, or you know, my ability to work in this field could be removed, could be taken.
How though?
Because perhaps if I don't come down on the right side of who we're condemning at that time, or if I don't speak out against, you know, the current villain.
Right.
Whereas I just want to poop along.
You're a documenter rather than a condemner or praiser, generally
speaking. Yeah, I'm not a cultural commentator.
I mean, you pass opinion on this podcast.
Yeah.
From time to time.
Yeah.
But same as me. I mean, I'm a bit... Well, I'm not very opinionated at all, really, on all this. I don't think, really. No, but they can't... You couldn't be stopped from putting pen to paper. Like, you can't be stopped from engaging with your audience, because it's not going through a facility anyway, really. You know what I mean? It goes through Patreon, and it goes on however the podcast goes into the real world. Mm-hmm. And so there's those things, but...
Everything else that I do in Esoterotica, like my writing and things like that, is all freelance. But still, if someone takes a dislike to you, particularly in Esoterotica, those people will then target your employer.
Right, but who's your employer?
Well, like, for that job, job, you know, there have been TV shows that have been filmed, trailers have gone out, episode one's gone out, and the whole thing's been pulled because of mass complaints about individuals.
How's it got to this?
I'm not saying in that, because a few people will know which series I'm talking
about.
Okay,
I don't.
Well, I'm not going to name it. It's not my place to.
Right.
A lot of people think that was very deserved. A lot of people wondered what happened.
Right.
You know, so it's strange sitting by and watching this, you know, and watching these pylons, being terrified then that by me mentioning something within the context of a wider story, I could be mentioning the wrong thing, which is a stupid way to be.
I don't relate to it.
I know you don't, and I wish I didn't. My head didn't behave like this, but it still does, sadly. Right. It's definitely something I need to get over. wish I could be more like you.
No, 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 not at all. No, because that might be the wrong way of being. But it's because I don't know, like, when I was, like, I don't know if I'd still be able to be a comic now. When I hear of stories now, I think, well, would I still be able to be a comic if I wanted to do stand-up again, which I don't and I'm not going to, but if I did want to, would I be able to?
Yeah.
Given my contrary and mischievous inherent behaviour, for one, given my disdain for being told what I can and can't do with my own life, what I can and can't read, what I can and can't repeat, what I can and can't say, you know, all those sort of things, which I'm really, and I don't think that's weird, to be like, no, I'll read whatever I want, and I'll watch whatever I want, and I'll make my own call on that. I don't want another individual or gang of individuals to tell me that I'm not allowed to read something or watch something or... I mean, I don't even mean enjoy. I mean, actually just use the thing in whatever way. I wouldn't put up with that at all. But nor would I ever do it the other way. Nor would I say to someone else, you can't. That word that gets bandied about so much that's been reappropriated, that I'm not going to say the word, but it begins with P. That word drives me insane. Yeah. Like, it really does. Yeah. It's like, don't you tell me what to think about something.
Yeah.
But what the rule that appears to have come in with that is, well, then in that case, then you are on their side. So I'm not on anyone's side. I'm on my side. Yeah. That's it. That's the only person whose side I'm on in my life is me.
Mm.
And I don't think it's even in a selfish way. I'll defend people if they're getting hurt and attacked unfairly. But I don't know. I find it a little bit worrying. Yeah.
So, have you got any comments?
I've got loads of them, but now I'm worried that this might seem pointed, because I'm not talking about a person. I'm not.
No,
like,
no, me neither.
You know, the way we're talking about it, I don't want to read something now and then be like, oh, they're going to think that was a big dig at them. Right, the comments. Keep your comments coming, but be aware of who you're talking to. Mike BT, Cult Beekeeper. I mean, this is the thing. Yeah. No matter what they say, if they've called themselves the Cult Beekeeper, kind of under my instruction because of a cult that I started, how seriously can you actually have a discussion? Yeah. Mike says, my uncle is a total crackpot. He believes every conspiracy going, full-on lunatic. He used to go on about orbs and rods and blah, blah, blah. When I challenged him with the camera flash explanation, he went nuts, saying I had no knowledge of how photography works and that his own research was right. I think that's just how that works. You become so ingrained in a particular idea that when challenged, no matter how logical an argument against it is, you get on the back foot and get aggressive. We are like that to an extent, some worse than others. Where is the line drawn between crackpot beliefs and mental illness? That's something that I've said a lot. And I try and tone that down in terms of how often I say that about, you know, it being a mental illness. But
I think it's when harm comes into it.
But how do we gauge what harm is?
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean? So we could call things harmless.
Yeah.
And then retrospectively go, oh my goodness, that caused this.
Yeah.
You know, so when, and also, as we've just been discussing, whose place is it to police that? You know, you can't tell people what to do or what to be. You certainly can't tell people what to believe, because belief is just an inherent thing.
Yeah.
You know, they believe what they believe, what they believe. But I suppose
it's when those, when, how and where those beliefs then proliferate. Because, like, within Esoterotica, there's a long history of, like, anti-Semitism and sexism and really horrible stuff that, regardless of where you stand, I presume that you'd see that as awful.
Just talk to the listener. Don't tell me what to
think. Well, you know, it's, please clarify that, for the love of God, clarify.
No, I'm not gonna clarify that, no.
Oh, God. Well, you know,
I'm not gonna live my life like that. If you can't work out what's a joke and what isn't, go away.
Well, you know, there's this really horrible vein in Esoterotica of these things that are just, they're poisonous. And I think that's when you need to start saying, okay, this, however we interpret this person's beliefs, they can be causing wider damage and they can be spreading ideas that could be incredibly harmful to other people's.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you know what's interesting? Given, again, this is more sociological than anything else, this, but I find this interesting as a outsider of society.
Mm-hmm.
When I look in,
yeah,
how all the little bees are all acting all the time.
Yeah.
When I look in, when I peruse that, there's two odd things going on societally, I think, at the moment. And by society, I mean worldwide.
Yes.
Where we have growth areas in two areas that are incongruous with each other. Uh-huh. So we have a growth area in supposedly free-thinking you know, thinking outside the box.
Mm.
By which I also include conspiracy theories and all that sort of thing. You know, yes. Not being, yeah. You know, the condemnation of the MSM, of the mainstream media,
mm-hmm.
all that sort of thing. You know, oh, don't believe what you're being told. So we've got the growth of that.
Mm.
And at the same time, we've got the growth of mental health awareness.
Yeah.
Right. And here's the problem with free speech.
Oh, God.
No, but it is. I absolutely subscribe to free speech, but here's the problem with it.
Yeah.
As a thing that people just throw out as
yes.
free speech. Yeah. Right. If you are online talking about, I don't know, you believe politicians are lizards, you believe that aliens roam the earth, you believe that, you know, pandemics are a hoax and it's a way of controlling the populace. But, you know, when you say all these things, that's the freedom of your expression. Okay. So that's where you're like, yeah, and weirdly, I encourage that myself, where it's like, no, think for yourself and actually, you know, think beyond what you've been told. And but the caveat when I say it is, and look for things that don't make any sense.
Yeah.
But if the people who are conspiracy theorists looked for things that didn't make any sense, they would have no conspiracy to believe in, right? Yeah. Because they're full of things that don't make sense.
Yeah.
But if we treat people that way, in terms of, like, let people be what they are and let people, you know, decide for themselves and all the rest of it, how do your family know whether or not you should be sectioned?
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
how
yeah.
If we're being taught to be very aware of mental health, yet we're letting pass people who essentially believe there's fairies at the bottom of the garden, what point do we go, well, you have failed that person because they're clearly mentally ill.
Yeah.
And you can't sit back and go, oh, no, they just believed in fairies. Like, well, then they are clearly mentally ill. That's how I feel about that.
It's that weird trough between belief and... When does belief become delusion? And
well, when Mike's saying that his uncle's a total crackpot...
Yeah.
And then goes on to say how, I guess, aggressively or whatever, he butts back when he's challenged on it.
Well, I suppose then it's having that... Having extreme... left-field beliefs, and then just bringing the doors down.
Yeah.
And just having absolutely no movement on those, even when presented with evidence to the contrary.
But I think people generally, whichever side of the fence they fall, that is generally the way that this works out.
Yeah.
That people do get their belief system sorted, be that a belief system of nothing or a belief system of the weird and wonderful or what have you.
Yeah.
And what won't be told, I guess because you're also socialised with the ideas of people will challenge you, which is a very religious idea as well, by the way. Mm. That's, you know, a lot of kind of hardline religions will say you need to stand firm when people challenge you. You know, you need to go and stand outside football matches with a placard and people will shout abuse at you, but you need to stand firm.
Yeah.
You need to preach the word and all that. You know, that is a handed down idea. Yeah. So... when you're indoctrinated, maybe, but, you know, when you accept a belief system, 9 times out of 10, you are also given the responses to criticism. So the amount of people, like, we've discussed this so many times, the amount of times that I've had from different unconnected people, you will never see nothing because you're not open-minded. You know, that basic argument, right?
Yeah.
So that is a passed down rebuttal.
Yeah.
Of somebody saying, essentially saying, you're saying black is white.
Yeah.
What you are saying is not possible in the world, but you're telling me that I'm not open-minded because I can't see why 2 and 2 makes 27.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, now be done about this. Kevin Moore said, I was starting to get scared about orbs, as there were hundreds of them all around me as I was walking through the old part of Lichfield. Then Kate said she took photos of snow in a graveyard and my fear was lessened. RJ Stardust, 2 weeks running now from Stardust.
Mm.
I suppose an element of the Stanford experiment... Okay, so I spoke about the Stanford experiment last week, about the Stanford University.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's too big a thing to talk about, but if you want to go and look it up, look it up. Could be applied to the discussion about why Jack the Ripper and his victims are seen as more... as characters as opposed to real people. The idea that anonymity removes empathy, which is supposedly why the guards in the experiment were able to abuse the inmates, in inverted commas, so easily without remorse, could be similar to the fact that we know so little about the victims of Jack the Ripper, so it's easy to not feel bad about enjoying a tourist attraction. This is all one sentence that trivialises their demise. So we need to explain Stanford now. So what happened in the Stanford experiment was, it was an experiment where a group of students, I think they were, or whatever, test subjects, whatever, people... were allocated roles. Some of them are guards, some of them were inmates. And it was to see basically how... It was basically to see if Lord of the Flies had anything to it.
Yeah, there's a brilliant German film called The Experiment, or Das Experiment.
That is about Stanford, isn't it? Or it's related
which
to it.
It's kind of like a reinterpretation of it. Okay. But that was brilliant. Yeah. You want to see just how intense and terrifying it was, and how quickly that kind of slip into Lord of the Flies happens.
Yeah, well, it's...
That's a really nice way. Again, It's a good way of seeing how that happens.
Well, it's comment on authority, isn't it, really? It's on how people react to being given power.
Yeah.
Is what it's about, really. I don't know what Stardust is on about here. Another amazing episode. Okay, I take it back. Sorry, Stardust, I didn't mean to criticise.
Yeah, but as for not knowing that much about the Ripper's victims, I think we really do. Certainly that book I mentioned last week called The Five by Hallie Rubentold. I'm not sure how you pronounce her name. I mean, she's pieced together a lot about the lives of the women. But of course, not an awful lot is known because they were lower class.
Yeah.
Citizens, they were lower class and they were lower class women.
So again, to do with status in many ways, I suppose. Yeah. Stardust also said, I did leave a comment on episode 21, re-time travel, but I don't think you saw it as 22 was already out by then. Is that part of Ito Terotica or not? Was it time travel, do you mean? Let's say yes. So that's a good point, actually. So if an episode has been and gone, mm-hmm. and we've read the comments out, I mean, I probably will see the comment, but it's very unlikely that I'll then go, oh, I must read that out in the next episode, because there's so many comments anyway. So it's, I mean, look at where we're at now. Not even done yours. Alice Norton says, Noel Edmonds believes in orbs, and that's enough to sway me on the matter. Not telling you in which direction, though. Ooh, bit of mystery. Richard Shaw writes, to celebrate International Women's Day, I'm going to get some Show Us Your Orb shirt made up. You're being deliberately naughty, Richard.
Richard. You mucky pop.
Andy Walker, ambassador for the 90s, especially the episodes of Lovejoy where he lost the mullet. Don't worry about it.
Bloody love Lovejoy.
Hello, I wasn't trying to stir with that question, and I certainly don't want to let sunlight in on the magic. Oh, Andy actually contacted me as well in private. Mm-hmm. I hope you don't mind me saying that, Andy. No problem at all. I replied and said, oh, no problem at all. This is another thing as well, isn't it? That when you have a discussion...
Mm.
And it's a back and forward with your audience and stuff.
Yeah.
If you disagree with me or us, or we disagree with you, or that don't mean we can't be friends. It's not like, you know, we can't we can't just all go, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
you know, like you and I can't do that because we have fundamentally different beliefs.
Yeah.
But we don't, like, fall out, do we not? I barely hear you.
You cannot.
Just little taps.
Don't you dare. Don't, because this is what I think.
Oh, come on. Do you think it's got to a point now where you should just show us your orbs? Oliver Woods. I might not be in the right frame of mind to record this podcast.
No, maybe not.
I think, because I've spoken about this, something changes inside me and I go, right,
really
upset people. I used to do this at gigs. If gigs were going particularly badly, I'd go, right, I'm going to... This will be a night you will remember forever. Sure, I won't get paid, but it'll be worth it. Oliver Woods, I would really love to be a friend of yours, Ian. Well, I think this isn't the site for that, Oliver. This is comments about loopholes. This isn't Match.com. Oh, well, thank you, Oliver. I don't really have friends, really, particularly.
No, I mean, there's a big filing system we have to go through as well to even get close to you.
I've noticed that Oliver didn't say that they wanted to be friends with you.
Well, no, it's fine.
Why do you not want to be friends with Kate,
Oliver? It's all right, it's fine.
Oliver!
I'm fine with that.
I can't say I'm going to be friends with you if Kate's just sat here with no friends.
It's fine, I don't want to be here with my orbs.
And they're trippy. Read one of yours, for God's sake. Honestly, read one of yours. I need to just take some deep breaths.
Yeah, need a minute.
Yeah, you read one
of
yours.
Okay, Warren O'Neill said, orbs are rubbish. they don't even go woo. Up your game, orbs, and I think that's just a perfect.
Good on you, Aaron. Yeah. Come on, let's get her. Come on, everyone. Let's get her. She's already vulnerable. Let's bring her down. Come on, we've got her, everyone. Right thinking people, who's with me?
Oh no, what's this? Oh, there's a lovely comment from Brian Hogan.
Okay.
He says, Kate, you do a great balance of goat. See, me fainting goat.
Okay.
You do a great balance of goat and GOAT, taking on Ian in those discussions. One is a shell-shocked wobbler, that's you, right, and the other, the greatest of all time, that's definitely me.
So,
well done. But wait, you too make for an entertaining, factually opinionated listen. See, right, it all comes nice in a little
bit. Can we
just
go back to the wobbler bit, please?
No, you're a wobbler. That's what you are, mate. You're a wobbler.
God, it was like being back at school then. That was...
Sophie Cleverly is also part of the Easily Startled gang.
There's
a gang of us now who are just ready to just cry and faint at
it's
the
news. It's not something to show off about.
No, but it's nice to have just a group of us, isn't it?
Yeah.
She says, I've occasionally watched / read true crime things, partly out of curiosity and partly as kind of murder mystery author research, but it always makes me feel extremely upset and scared and miserable. I'm not sure I quite get how people can watch it and find it a fun or relaxing time. Also on the Orb front, I vaguely remember reading that Noel Edmonds, we've got another Noel comment, is obsessed with orbs and that he's talked about it on Deal or No Deal and stuff. And I think Ian said he worked on that show.
Ian
was the box. Another mysterious orb connection. I think they're just dust, by the way. Sorry, orb fans.
Can I just say? Just a little hint. I mean, you be how you be. But if I'm already in a mischievous and contrary mood, right, the worst thing you can possibly do...
Yeah, is say you're a box.
...is give me things to... You know, like, I'm a bit like Mike Beattie's uncle. Right? Is that I will just... immediately start defending myself against being accused of being a box on Deal or No Deal. I didn't have any of these conversations with Mr. Edmonds. I think that would have been a poor move. I've worked on another programme with someone who has turned out to be a bit of a crackpot.
Yeah.
In that, you know, I'm saying that in a friendly way, by the way. I'm not done. So, you know, somebody who believes in what I consider to be daft things, but I think the worst thing I could possibly do is to engage with that, particularly at work. I mean, I could do it now, but because I don't do those jobs anymore. But you know, I wouldn't have engaged with Noel Edmonds about that sort of thing at that point. But then again, if it had come up and I hadn't, I would now be regretting it.
Yeah,
it's quite complicated. But I'm not aware of what Edmonds has said about orbs and stuff. I know he writes things on his hands, on his arm.
He's big into manifestation. And
do you reckon he is, though?
Well, he said so. When Deal or No Deal kind of revived his fortunes, he said it was because he, you know, willed it from the universe.
I don't know that he does believe it. I don't, like, I'm not... I mean, if he says he does, then he does. You know, I'm not saying he's lying. I'm just saying that I think it'd be a relatively good publicity story, wouldn't it? If it was invented, it would be a good hook to hang your hat on, you know, to be that kind of weird. Like, I don't think Uri Geller believes what he says. I don't think he does. But I understand why he says it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people who supposedly have these beliefs that I just don't... Because I think if you're that... Again, I'm going to borrow Mike's word. If you're that much of a crackpot, then you wouldn't be able to make it work for your career because you'd be too busy smearing shit up the wall.
Shut up.
No, but do you know what I mean, though? You wouldn't... If you were that unhinged in actuality... You wouldn't be able to go through the logistics of... If they were susceptible to that, they wouldn't be able to hold it together to do the important grown-up business stuff. And Edmund's run, you know, he's run businesses and things like that, you know what I mean? He's a smart cookie.
Yeah.
And if you ever see him, you know, giving evidence against people and all that, you know, when those things have happened, he's a smart cookie, he knows what he's on about. So I don't know, I would err on the side of it's a bit of showbiz that. I'm sure he'd absolutely contest that.
Yeah.
And I don't know for certain. Yeah. I just feel like that's showbiz.
Yeah, I don't know. I do feel like maybe like a decade or so ago that saying that you've got an interest in, like a genuine belief in sort of esoteric things wouldn't necessarily be a good point for your career.
No.
At all.
Well,
but now, with the rise of celebrity ghosty programmes, I think now it's just a handy little career step.
Yeah, but he messed it up a couple of times as well, Edmonds, in the because don't forget as well that part and parcel of ensuring your star remains in the sky is financial. You know, it's to do with how much money you're bringing in and as a business, as you as a business and all that sort of thing. So there were other elements that could have been viewed as being capitalising on airy-fairy beliefs and things. And, you know, he rather infamously... made a statement about, was it a box or something that stopped cancer or cured cancer? And I know that someone that I know,
mm-hmm.
and the only reason I'm not mentioning their name is because I don't want to draw attention to them, because I think they got quite uncomfortable with it, so I'm not going to mention their name, but someone that I know confronted Edmonds about it on social media and got a rebuttal back that just sort of doubled down on it. There was much, and it caused quite a fuss.
Yeah.
You know, but I know that that person backed out of that, was like, I don't want anything, I don't want to have this discussion in public. So that's why I'm not saying who it is. Mm-hmm. But that was a misstep, that, to be talking about.
That's another good example of when esoteric beliefs become dangerous.
Yeah.
And that's like when we get into like faith healers and kind of pseudo medical procedures, things like that. That's one example of when, you know, weird beliefs can so fun anymore.
Yeah, so to bring this back into what I was saying before,
mm-hmm.
at what point, if Noel Edmonds truly believes that the box, forgive me because I don't know what the actual detail, I can't remember the details of it, but let's say it was something to do, it was some machine that did something that was either a cure for cancer or it was a cancer deterrent, whatever it was. If Mr. Edmonds truly believes that, at what point do his family say, we need to call someone because this is, you can't say these things and I don't know why you believe this.
Right, well, I found it and...
Okay.
Yeah, so Noel claimed that his prostate cancer was cured with an electromagnetic pad and positive thinking.
Right.
So not ideal.
Well, it's ideal for him. I mean, it's this is where it gets difficult, this sort of discussion, because if that's what he believes, then that's fine.
Yeah.
If you then market it as a cure for that. Like, but there's plenty of evidence of positive thinking, by the way, being attributed to somebody getting over something that they weren't supposed to get over, right? So that is absolutely, there's plenty of testimony for that. Yeah. I don't know if that does have an effect or whether it's just coincidence. I've got no idea. I'm not a doctor. But that bit I don't contest.
Yeah.
The electromagnetic thing, I would have to listen to experts about that. If a doctor could say, no, actually, there's something in this. You know, it's not...
Well, this particular box of Edmonds, he said that it was a simple box that slows aging, reduces pain, lifts depression and stress and tackles cancer.
Okay.
And then said, scientific fact, disease is caused by negative energy. Is it possible your ill health is caused by your negative attitude?
Right, so here's the issue with that. So here's the issue with him saying that, is that that is a reappropriation for a marketing, you know, for basically a business idea, which is we're going to sell this box. Now, what's been said there isn't strictly untrue. However, we need to replace the negative energy word with stress.
Yeah.
Stress is a killer, that's true. Yeah. You know, that is well founded as a thing.
That was all disease.
there's a lot of, again, a lot of testimony and medical people who will say, now stress will see you off. Stress will go straight to your heart. Plenty of people within the medical fraternity will say that, that stress is the thing that you need to sort out in your life
to
stay well.
Of course, but it isn't the cause of all disease, obviously.
No, but I think that's reappropriating stress as negative energy, which is what stress is.
But it's also reappropriating, like you say, it's like a marketing sort of slogan. It's reappropriating the same sort of discourse that you hear in very like extreme religious groups and fundamentalist Christian groups where, you know, people are encouraged to, you know, like pray the gay away and pray the cancer away.
Yeah.
And things that are just really corruptive and vile views.
Yeah, but if you're all in on that, if you're all in on a supreme being or whatever, or you know, and you make the decision yourself that something is a bad thing. I mean, I think generally speaking, we could all agree that cancer is a bad thing.
Yeah.
I don't think we all agree that gay is a bad thing.
No.
But there are some people who do. By the way,
they do.
You know, it's. I think I'll put my neck out here. Most right-minded people don't think that's the case.
Definitely.
But if you're all in on believing that there can be exterior forces that can help. Let's stick to cancer.
Okay.
You know, that can help with that, and to pray, you would get results from that.
It's like prayer in conjunction with conventional medical treatment.
Yeah.
I think most people will agree that if that's within your belief system, that's fine. But it's when you forego actual medical treatment.
No, because this is all the same thing, it's just different words.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the same thing as being positive
when
you've been given medically bad news.
Yeah.
That's the same. Praying is being positive.
Oh, yeah,
it's just
no.
a different thing. You know, you're,
I'm saying, yeah. It's whether you are taking positivity or your weird little electric box.
Yeah.
If you're having that in conjunction with
but
medical.
But there is testimony
yeah.
that says, like Edmonds has said,
mm.
there is testimony that says, again, it's whether they believe it or it's whether Edmonds believes it or not, but there are definitely people who do believe that.
Yes.
Do believe that because they were so positive, they got better. That definitely yeah. is a thing. So... that's how
they believe
I view
that,
it.
But it's not necessarily medical.
It doesn't matter either way, does it? The issue is then the idea of marketing that later as a definite thing.
Yes.
That's what the issue is,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's anyone's place to say to someone, no, it's not. That's not what happened at all. If someone's had cancer, got over cancer, and it's from positive thinking, in their eye, if that's how they feel themselves,
mm.
it is not for us to contest that. But it is for people to contest when they then... prescribe
yes,
that later
yeah,
on to
okay,
other people.
Okay, yeah.
You know, where they say you don't need chemotherapy because you
because
can just
this
think
worked
positive.
For me.
Yeah,
yes.
that's when it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blimey. I did say this podcast was a bad idea. Jesus. I think I said at the beginning that it was... just to lighten the tone here, I did actually pause the recording for a moment then and had to pause so Kate could fart.
Oh, shut up, I hate you. I did not. It was the chair.
I also think this is going to be one of those episodes which is a comments episode. I think that's as far as we... I don't know how I can cut this. Because
yeah.
I feel like if I get into a cutting, editing mood on this,
yeah.
there'll be no left of it.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be...
just discussion special.
Well, it's the whole thing's a discussion, isn't it? This is the problem when your listeners are too interesting. So when they spark things up as a discussion... this is the thing with the comments that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an ongoing back and forward, you and I, where we talk about whether we should shorten the comments section, whether it should stay the same,
mm.
whether we should be selective about what comments that we, you know, read out, etc., etc., etc. And I always stand quite firm with, no, we should give everyone their voice
yes.
when they responded to our work.
Yeah.
And also, as has happened today, I know it's not very structured because of the nature of comments, so they're all different. But it definitely sparks us. It definitely sparks discussions
oh,
and things
yeah.
and interesting places, I think.
Definitely. Definitely. And I do feel, you know, we've touched on medical I'm slowly shrinking as I say this because the burden of this sentence is so great.
Well, just chucking the caveat there. I'm just like, well, for me anyway, I can chuck my caveat and say, I've not thought about any of these comments. I don't think this discussion was going where it's going. So I'm just responding in the moment. I'm not even considering what I'm saying, probably to the depth that it needs considering. But I consider myself a considerate person anyway.
Yeah, I do think though, with us touching on esoteric or, you know, dodgy beliefs in conjunction with medical treatment.
Yeah.
That's one thing I do think we should do a proper discussion on, like, faith healers and just kind of acknowledge just how dangerous a lot of religious groups
are. Do you mean
are.
Just in case Noel Edmonds can't find something in this episode to sue us for? To give him a better chance of finding a legal loophole, which is, after all, what this is all about.
Yes, of course. Well, no, I mean, like, with... There have been many opportunities over the last few episodes for us to touch on, you know, on faith healers and people who are much like, you know, religious leaders in many instances, exploit the weaknesses and the concerns and the health of those who believe in them. Like when we mentioned Andy Kaufman the other week.
Yeah.
In his final, you know, final months, he went, I think it was to the Philippines, was it? To visit...
Did that happen?
Yes.
I know it happened in the film.
Yeah.
And there's a book called Lost in the Funhouse that I read many, many years ago, and I can't remember if that happened. So, yeah, to them people that, like,
pretend that they're
pulling stuff out of your body.
Yes, yeah, it's people. Like kind of psychic surgery type thing, where you're meant to conduct surgery without ever really breaking the skin. It's painless, because they're just ripping up bits of animal gut and the top of you, you know.
And in the film... again, I don't know if this happened in real life, but in the film it was portrayed that he found that hilarious because he'd spent his entire life doing that, metaphorically speaking.
Yeah.
So he really laughed, even though it was his last hope.
Yeah.
He still found that very amusing that they were getting away with this.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, I'm not entirely engaged with the discussion at the moment because I am thinking about whether Noel Edmonds could sue.
I I'd be, you know, I used to love Mr. Blobby. I'd be gutted if he sued
don't
me.
Joe, look at you trying to get on the right side of him, so it's only me in court.
No, no, tell you what I loved best about...
He's sat at home now going, oh, well, I won't sue her. Yeah. Because she loved Mr. Blobby.
I did.
But I'm suing him. I remember him when he was the warm-up at Deal or No Deal. I didn't like him then because he kept saying he preferred Sizzles. Well, if you are listening, Noel, I would ask you to cast your mind back that something you tell me about driving a supercar and getting pulled over by the police. I have an ace up my sleeve.
Oh, Jesus. I was just going to mention how much I used to love Mr. Blobby's Pink Lemonade, which,
right, okay.
You know, was long.
Oh, can you not get it now?
Shut up. No, no, it was discontinued in the 90s.
Should we get back to the comments anyway?
Yep.
Because at the moment, I feel like I'm goading Nolan. And I really don't want to goad him, mainly because I just can't be bothered. I don't want to have to leave the house to go to court. I think I've been reasonable in what I've said. I think the tone is correct.
Well, let's go back to the lovely comments.
Yeah, and then we'll tell people how to contact us and finish.
PJ said, were orbs a thing before photography? I mean, it'd be possible to spin some yarn that red eye in photos was proof of demonic possession. You could say red eye has always been observed by folk with the gift, but it took photography to capture the secret and give proof to the masses. Right, if that's not already a theory, can we push that?
Clarify what it is. What do you mean?
Well, in...
When you get red eyes in photos.
Yeah, you don't really get it so much nowadays, do you?
Yeah, it still happens.
Do you? Well,
In traditional flash photography,
your eyes would glow red.
Yeah.
So you'd look like a little demon.
Yeah, which is the reflection from the back of your eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, have people actually said that that is
I don't know,
paranormal?
But if not, yeah. But as for...
I was thinking when PJ was saying about did orbs exist before photography, like if people have been like painting portraits of people and just painted orbs in and go, well, they were there.
Yeah.
They were there.
Oh, I love that. Big portrait of Henry VIII with orbs all over his face. Brilliant. Were orbs a thing before photography? I had a little snoop about this because, spoiler, dear listeners, well, it's more of an admission than a spoiler.
Yeah.
I haven't made it to the end of that orbs book.
Well, you left it in my house.
Yeah.
It's actually still in this room somewhere.
It is. It's on the side. Yeah. It's just, I just needed a break.
Yeah, okay. You know? I understand that.
Don't
force it on me. So I've got to see it every time I come in here.
Well, the term orbs, in terms of what we know them, was only established in about 1996, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really? And I've tried to have a snoop to see if there were many mentions of orbs prior to, like, the popularisation of point-and-shoot digital cameras.
Okay.
There doesn't seem to be an awful lot out there.
But people don't see the orbs and then take a picture of it.
Well, no,
they
some people say they do now. Some people say they've seen orbs and rocks and things like that. But he goes on to say, if someone sane argued that red eye was the camera flash reflecting off capillaries in the back of the eye, you could hit back that there are different sorts of red eye and only trained experts can spot the real demonic red eye. Right, I'm all in on this. I don't think logical reasoning makes much impact if someone wants to believe something. I think it boils down to if the belief is leading to harm. See, PJ, you're just helping knit this into a lovely little
can I just speak to normal people for a second?
For example, plenty
of... if you're listening out there, people that, let's say, are loosely of the same opinions that I am, again, what we would call right-minded, I think the time has probably come to just leave them to it. I think we should just leave them to it. I promise you, the dinner ladies will eventually destroy themselves.
That's a t-shirt, no point, the dinner ladies will destroy.
There is no point even engaging them in grown-up discussion, is there not? Because they are absolutely not of this world. So should we just go? Should we just all? Should we just stop engaging with them? Let's just start just tutting at them and walking away.
For example, plenty of people believe it is possible to talk to the dead, but they also hold beliefs not to exploit the vulnerable. Some people don't have these moderating counter-beliefs.
Yeah.
See?
Can I express something that I've been thinking about for quite a while?
Mm.
I've been thinking about it since it happened, but I actually was thinking about it more recently.
Yes.
Which is, I think there's perhaps an unfair weightedness, or an apparent unfair weightedness, certainly from how I talk about things, that this vindictive streak only exists in the belief part of this.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
I personally have been what I would consider to be quite heavily slighted in print.
Mm.
in a magazine, that is a magazine that holds a skeptic opinion.
Yeah.
A skeptical opinion, but yes. I won't say what the magazine was called. And the magazine interviewed Barry from the Parapod
mm-hmm.
about the movie. And within that interview, the interviewer stated something that Barry then agreed with
mm.
that was completely factually incorrect,
yeah.
which was that the movie
mm.
was weighted
mm.
in terms of how many people, so in numbers,
mm.
in terms of how many people were given voice who were sceptics to how many people who were given voice who believed in stuff. That's what it was.
Yeah.
And the interviewer said that, do you think, it was very leading, it was, yes. do you think it's unfair, something like that. That, you know, the director of the film, i.e. me,
mm.
weighted it with more people who were sceptical
mm-hmm.
than who were believers. Now, the actual fact is, mm. if you can be bothered to count,
yeah.
so for someone who supposedly is looking at things closely and not letting anything get past them
mm.
in a magazine that's all about that,
yeah.
if you'd actually counted, you would have found it was weighted way the other direction.
Yes.
But yeah. because you weren't concentrating, you only counted the talking heads, you didn't count the people that were in situ.
Yes.
In the scenes, right? Yeah. So in the actual scenes in the film, there were far more believers than mm. there were sceptics. And that was balanced,
mm-hmm.
or more balanced, by me putting talking heads in of people who had a different opinion. That's yeah. what actually happened. And then that was agreed with in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, that's in print
yeah.
that this film that people might not have seen is really biased.
Yeah.
Now, if it was biased in any way,
mm.
it was me going, I need to tone this down because I'm running riot here.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. if it was biased in any way, it was that.
And I think a lot of the edits that you and Simon
yeah.
made that cut out, you know, certain
quite damning scenes, stuff.
Really damning
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
By removing those, you were very, very far too fair almost.
Well,
to,
no, but, it's not, to but I wanted to present something that was more balanced. You know, I didn't
of
know.
Course.
I didn't,
yeah.
That's not what I wanted to put out there.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But I could have done, if I'd done a director's yeah. cut, I could have done a sledgehammer.
Oh, completely.
Is what I could have done.
Yeah.
And, you know, the footage exists to do that.
Yeah.
But what my feeling afterwards was like, you know, there's quite a lot within scepticism and within organised scepticism,
mm-hmm.
which is like, oh, you need to be fair, you need to be fair and all that. And it's like, but none of that fairness was afforded to me.
No.
You know what I mean? I was completely misrepresented by that.
Mm.
Completely.
Yeah.
And I found it really upset me, yeah. by the way, as well.
Yeah, no, of course.
Not just because it was a sceptical publication, because
mm-hmm.
that was neither in or there. I'd been mm-hmm. upset either way. But because it felt like a really... It felt snidey, that. Like,
yeah.
It felt really snidey. And I also felt it completely discredited the writer as well.
Yeah.
Because what they were saying was wrong.
Mm.
And they don't need me to affirm that it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The evidence that it was wrong was there in the movie itself.
Yeah.
So this goes on throughout.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about people being devious and talk about people,
yeah.
you know, messing about and being dinner lady. That to me is a dinner lady.
Yes.
On the sceptical
yeah.
side.
Yeah.
It's stirring.
Mm.
It worked.
Yes.
It caused a row.
Yeah.
And you know it was agenda led.
Yeah.
I mean, I know where it came from, but
yes.
it was agenda led.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a publication, so that discredits you.
Yeah. No, I think you're dead on, and it's quite pertinent, really, because I've, like I said, I see a lot more of this sort of thing on Twitter, and I'm a lot more sort of connected, albeit as a kind of voyeur.
Mm.
To, you know, a lot of paranormal events and sceptical events and things like that. And certainly of late...
I'll get to your comment eventually, Annette, by the way.
Yeah, there's been some... Nicely, I'm going to be very dainty.
Okay.
Some people who are sceptically minded,
mm.
being given platforms, whether that be through any form of media, whether in person or, you know, any other type of digital media, being presented as... reasoned skeptics, whereas their behaviour during these events and online has been nothing short of vile.
Do you mean me?
Not you. No, you're fine. I'm trying so hard not to name names.
Nobody.
Because it's and that I found really upsetting, that, you know, you can be sceptical, you can be, you know, a believer of the weird and wonderful,
mm.
but when you start personally attacking others and giving yourself a kind of believing that you sit on some kind of lifeguard chair of intellectualism.
Can I just
because
say,
you don't believe in
I wasn't
ghosts.
Attacking Noel Edmonds. I was saying...
It's, you know, I
how
find
I
that,
perceive it. That's
I find
saying.
That giving those people prominent places and giving those people more kudos is dangerous. It's arguably more dangerous than giving people that believe in fairies the same amount.
Yeah,
of,
but I, again, this text is right back to the beginning
the
of this,
field,
which is
know.
I can't say, well, they need to be silenced. I can't say that because they don't. But there needs to be... Well, I've had plenty of experiences where I've called stuff out. I've called out behaviour.
Yeah.
I've let it go for a bit and then gone, right, do you know what? I'm not even... I'm going to call this out now.
Yeah.
Because I've had enough of this.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, look at you, you big bully. It's like, well, no, let's forget. I think they call it, again, the kids call it gaslighting, I think.
Yes.
Which is that you are silenced from speaking both the truth and contesting something.
Yeah.
You know, that you'll have people who will, the moment you actually call them out on appalling behaviour, will make it that it was you that was the horrible person.
Mm.
And, you know, that's something that I think I'm all just for back and forth. So I'm all for, like, look, say what you want, and I can also say what I want as well. We can thrash this out. We don't need to, by the way, have a winner at any point.
Yeah.
But you can't silence someone's right of reply in either direction.
Mm.
And you certainly can't misrepresent people. You know, that's something that I'm very strongly against.
Yeah.
So if you are misrepresented, like I said about that article and stuff, and other things that have happened as well, I've been misrepresented.
Yes.
I mean, within my rights to defend myself.
Mm.
And then you can believe what you want. The viewers can believe what they want then.
Mm.
So I'm all for the back and forth. And I wonder sometimes whether the people that are doing these things would say the same.
Yeah.
Or whether they'd say, no, they're problematic. Don't you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah, no, exactly.
That's now the argument. No, they're problematic.
It's like, let's
the
not,
end.
Yeah, let's not discuss it. Oh, they're problematic.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
So.
And you get that a lot in esoteric and the paranormal. A lot. People with dissenting views. While, you know, people who aren't evil, or notably nasty people, they can be very easily cut out of a conversation by just saying, no, we don't talk to them. It's just a big schoolyard with ghosts in it.
I mean, I'm quite happy for them to not talk to me. When you said that we just don't talk to them, it was like, oh, that sounds brilliant. Anyway, Annette Truby, another great episode, thank you. Not, I presume you don't mean this one. It's human nature to process things through humour. It's a coping mechanism. I wasn't laughing at what you say in that. I was laughing at the idea that that's true anymore. It's a coping mechanism, but also a release of fear through trivialising the event. These things are usually unconscious. I do think it's also a big part of British culture to laugh at the inappropriate. I don't have a problem with comedians, podcasts, even businesses making a living from jokes, documentaries, experiences, etc., as long as they're not glorifying the killer. Okay, this is all relating back to, I was talking about true crime sort of stuff.
Yes.
It's when they make the villain the star and dehumanise the victim, that I find it distasteful. I think it's because of the nature of celebrity and because of the nature of how idolisation works. And you don't have to like something to idolise it or to present them as an idol.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't have to be something that you approve of
to
elevate someone to that position.
Yeah.
So I think that's the difficulty. But again, it's not, they can do it. I just get a bit like, I just feel like, why do people like this? I don't, you know. But they do.
Yeah.
It's not, I can't do anything about that. They do.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. When it, you know, especially in discussions of murderers and, you know, crime-related things.
Yeah.
Like, I completely get it. You know, the interest in want to know what happened in this case.
Yeah.
Whatever. I think the part of it where I'd hope it was a bit more black and white into what's moral and what's not is when people who have products relating to a crime then go and make merchandise.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if it's like, I don't want Jack the Ripper on a T-shirt. I don't want, you know, Fred and Rose West on a bum bag.
Oh, I do.
No, you don't.
Too tired. Wrinkly Abbey, Ian nailed it about the orbs. Thank you. That's all I need to read, isn't it?
Oh, okay.
When shown an orb photo as evidence, it's like they're trying to gaslight you when, I mean, I hate that word. I know I've used it myself as well. I hate that word. When that photo is clearly dust or a bug or snow in a cemetery around Christmas. The story about Stanislav and his inability to take photos is an interesting one. I love Kate for bringing things I've never heard of before. Never heard of the God Helmet either. Can you take credit for the God Helmet, Kate Cheryl?
At the time, I mentioned it was Graves.
It was Rob Graves
said,
who pushed
have
you
we
in
covered
that direction.
The God Helmet?
So, Wrinkly Abbey, even though Kate expanded, it was Rob Graves who was the flame to spark the conversation. Yes. But I do feel, this is Wrinkly Abby still, but I do feel that I'll never tire of calling her Wrinkly. But I do feel like Earl Stanislav might not be a reliable narrator, or we're not getting the whole story. Biofields sound a bit too close to Reiki and aura photography for me.
It is a bit, isn't it?
It really is. Morgan Heggie, I'm about 2 episodes behind. Right, well, you can come back when you're caught up, mate. Starts telling us about sleep paralysis. I never had sleep paralysis in my life until I started reading about it and got really interested in it. At work one day, whilst reading about sleep paralysis, I decided I wanted to experience it and just sat on the toilet and slept for 10 minutes. Literally minutes later, I experienced it. I think what might have happened here, Morgan, is I think it's that thing where you sit on the toilet for too long and your legs go numb. I don't think that's sleep paralysis. Yeah. I also don't think you can just wish it.
Can you have IBS-induced sleep paralysis?
Well, Morgan said literally minutes later, I experienced it. Sounded like somebody was shouting words into my ear and I couldn't wake up and I heard a swarm of bees around my head. I mean, were the words, get back to work? Jamie Wallace, the cult space roadie. Don't worry about it. Another great episode, although I admit I listened to it while I was unpacking my Tesco delivery. Sorry. Oh. Hey, you can shout where you want. I don't tell people what they can and can't do or can and can't believe. It is a complete misconception that I actually am controlling in that way.
No, of
you can
not.
Do what you want.
Of course not, but Tesco?
If Jamie wants to go to Tesco, he can go to Tesco.
Fine. Yeah.
I agree with Ian about orbs. I'm baffled that they were ever considered any kind of evidence, being so clearly dust, bugs, etc. Video doorbells have made it worse. With every idiot who captures a spider crawling across the lens, uploading it to the internet as evidence of a ghost. Tell you what, if I uploaded my doorbell stuff, because I've got a video of the door, I've got a few cameras as well, and all my cameras, I think, around the house, all have moments, because they're infrared as well.
Yes. Yeah.
So, because you can get, got night vision in them as well, can find all sorts of things. I could crack on as a chupacabra around here. There was a deer bolted through my garden the other day. On the camera, you really couldn't see it. It was so fast. I knew it was a deer because I saw it with my own eyes.
Yeah.
When I looked back at the footage, it was like, that could be anything.
Yeah.
I could release that and say, the beast. The beast of Bolesworth Manor. My last comment is, Jesse Miller, love the episode about the country NASA person. A large chunk of NASA, especially the side that has to do with rockets, is located in Huntsville, Alabama, which is in the deep south. I've heard several interviews with very intelligent people with that thick accent, and it took me a while to get over my own bias so I can understand yours. Love the series, love you both, take care, Jesse. Cheers, Jesse. I was being contrary. I was just being mischievous. I'm aware that, thick sounding people can be very intelligent. I mean, look at me. Any more comments before we wrap up for this entire episode? We do this from time to time, don't we? A comments episode.
Yeah, it's quite nice, really, isn't it?
Oh, I like it. I think it might be intonable to listen to.
Oh, let's hope not. Hazel Quinlan, it all hangs on you, Hazel. Yeah. With Jack the Ripper stuff.
A bit more gaslighting.
I feel like the victims are often sexualised and portrayed as busty ladies wearing corsets, running down a cobbled street away from a shadowy figure. Horrible crimes against women being made sexy feels really dehumanising and it just makes me sad. It feels like us women can't escape being over-sexualised even if we're long dead.
Well, thanks, Hazel.
Yeah, no, I think she is.
That really got us back on track, didn't it?
I think she did say Happy International Women's Day for yesterday.
But it's completely true, isn't it?
It is.
It's absolutely
true. It's...
But I also think, to counter that a bit, I'm not countering that at all. But I also think, to balance on that, I don't think that's necessary. I don't think people need that pointing out to them.
Yeah.
I don't think that's in them as a thing. Do you know what I mean? I think if you point it out, people might go, oh gosh, yeah, it is.
Yeah,
isn't it? It's horrible. This is horrible.
I think it's kind of a mix with that. I mean, I think, when you take any kind of imagery out of it, the victims, they're not just women anymore. They're not real women. They're kind of sexy commodities.
Yeah.
Because they were sex workers. I think most, if not all of the victims were sex workers.
Yeah.
So you're already seeing them with that inherent prejudice over the centuries, or they are lesser in society.
Mm.
But then on top of that, I think a lot of the images, certainly that I grew up with when it came to like Ripper shows and like on telly and things like that.
Yeah.
The illustrations that were used to kind of illustrate the case were from the London, like the Illustrated News.
Okay.
So there were these really overblown etchings.
Right.
Of women with, you know, their petticoats all over the place and sort of imaginings of what those attacks might have been like.
Right, okay.
And they were very dramatic, overblown.
And were they essentially cartoonised? Were they?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So okay. I think because of that, we don't have photos, we have drawings, and drawings that are inherently flawed because they were meant kind of as entertainment. Everyone involved in the Ripper murders, i.e. the Ripper and the victims, they've sort of become caricatures of themselves, but kind of very cruelly and very tellingly, the women have, again, come off worse in their legacy.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I don't think it's a catch-all that the people who've inadvertently done that have been flawed people who hold those opinions.
No, it's like a kind of a societal, cultural sort of like learned behaviour.
It's a lazy shorthand is what it is.
Yeah, that's been passed down the centuries.
Yeah,
so
if you actually sat
normal.
Down with them, that's what I was saying. If you sat down with them and said, just take a moment and look how this looks.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to give people the credit that they go, goodness me, this is terrible, isn't
it? And I think that's the point of like re-examining certainly things in the 19th century that were very grisly, is that we just see them as normal. Like, oh yeah, Jack the Ripper murders. And then, because we don't really give that sort of thing generally much thought, to actually sit down and make them people again, humanise them. It's unsettling, it becomes real. So,
I think I might do a slow fade from that. And just bring the music in really, really quietly. Because the other thing I'm thinking about at the moment is, how are people going to comment on this episode? Because what's going to happen is, we're going to put this out, an episode that's entirely dedicated to comments, and then the only information they've got to discuss with their comments is going to be about the comments. And before you know it, we are locked
trapped in a comment
in the
loop.
Same comments forevermore. This is all we will ever talk about for the rest of our natural lives.
Should I do a spoiler for next week's topic?
If you want.
Right, next week we'll be talking about my favourite exorcist.
Right, so if you've got any thoughts on exorcisms, you can bring your comments to the table now, and we can integrate them into the episode.
But not exercising people.
What, the exercising?
That'll hook them in, won't it?
What?
But if they're not exercising people...
Don't turn
what
this podcast into a cryptic crossword.
It's not, it's like, you know, it's like...
If I was listening to this and somebody said that, I'd go, well, I'm not playing with that. And if you're going to be like that, then I can't be arsed with you. Bye.
All right. It's...
Unsubscribe. That's what I would do.
Right, it's a man...
Just tell me. I'd be sat here going, just tell me.
Right, fine. It's a man who exercised the Bermuda Triangle.
Well, you don't want to miss that one. Thank you for joining us on this comments special. That was exactly what we were planning to do. We were always planning to do just comments.
Yep.
Kate didn't spend ages prepping for something that we haven't done.
Nope, I'm fine.
I've been Ian Bolesworth.
I've been Kate Cheryl.
We shall see you again next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Loopholes is an Infinite Hermit production in association with Burials and Beyond, with Kate Cheryl and Ian Bolesworth. Music by Thomas Funderay. Produced by Ian Bolesworth.